Schmidt v. Astru. Ms. Allow.
May it please the court. I'm Heather Alloy on behalf of appellant Leanne Schmidt. The district court's decision upholding the ALJ's denial of Social Security benefits should be reversed. In this case, we are missing many logical bridges to the ALJ's conclusions. The ALJ first failed to explain the weight given to the different examining and treating medical sources. Second, the ALJ failed to explain why certain limitations were excluded from the mental and physical residual functional capacity findings. And third, failed to explain his credibility finding. First, the ALJ failed to indicate the weight given to the medical sources, muddying the rationale behind the residual functional capacity or RFC finding. The ALJ stated that he did not place controlling weight on examining psychologist Dr. Desmond's opinion, but he explicitly cited a portion of Dr. Desmond's opinion in the hypothetical question given to the vocational expert. The ALJ included a limitation in the hypothetical for, quote, a reduction of stress, unquote, citing the source as Dr. Desmond. However, a reduction of stress is neither compliant with 96-8P, SSR 96-8P, nor does it adequately account for Dr. Desmond's actual opinion that Schmidt could not, quote, tolerate the stress and pressure of full-time competitive employment, unquote. Therefore, a disabling limitation was ostensibly credited, but erroneously converted by the ALJ to a non-disabling limitation with no explanation or support from the record. Second, the physical limitation portion of the ALJ's RFC was also erroneous and unsupported. The commissioner acknowledges that the ALJ's finding was contrary to SSR 96-9P in providing for a sit-stand option, but not specifying the frequency of the alternation. The commissioner cited Dr. Jalil's opinion that Schmidt needed to change her position at her own option throughout the day as an example of what should have been included in the RFC and the hypothetical. The problem is neither the ALJ's RFC nor his hypothetical question contained this necessary information about the sit-stand option. As a result, the ALJ erroneously relied on the VE's testimony that certain jobs could be performed. The ALJ credited Schmidt's complaints of pain, numbness, and tingling in her hands and wrists, but then he distilled this into a limitation for no power gripping without any explanation, similar to the error noted in...
Why wasn't the ALJ entitled to reject Jalil's, the questionnaire he filled out? Because what the ALJ said, I'm looking at page 8 of his opinion, Dr. Jalil recently reported that the claimant lacks the persistence and pace for even sedentary. So that's the questionnaire, right?
Yes.
But in her previous encounters with Jalil, her treating internist, he hadn't found disability. So can't the ALJ conclude that, he filled out the questionnaire as a favor to his patient, but he really didn't think she was disabled?
Your Honor, the ALJ could conclude that if his reasons supported his decision. However, the problem here is the ALJ's has no reasoning in support of his finding. First, Dr. Jalil did not offer any statement regarding disability or limitations before because he wasn't asked. When he was asked to provide it, the information he provided was in line with that provided by all of the other treating physicians throughout Schmidt's longitudinal treatment history. Now, also, Dr. Jalil previously
examined her and found that she didn't have serious problems.
There are a few notes of normalities. I believe there are three notes of normal examinations.
Right.
But and there are also significant evidence that there are abnormal findings.
Isn't that for the ALJ to weigh?
I'm sorry, excuse me?
Isn't it for the ALJ to weigh up the different evidence? And he can rely on Jalil's previous examinations of her, which didn't find serious problems.
The ALJ may weigh the evidence, but when he does not accord controlling weight to a treating physician, he must provide good reasons.
That's not true.
Well, Dr. Jalil was clearly not trying to do a favor.
We don't buy that business about controlling weight to treating physician testimony. And we've pointed out that the Social Security Administration's regulation is very ambiguous and doesn't really indicate any particular weight.
Okay, assuming...
Anyway, even if you do, what is Dr. Jalil's evaluation? Is it checking the questionnaire, or is it the reports of his examinations before he knew that she was looking for disability benefits?
Even starting from the premise that Dr. Jalil's opinion should be accorded no additional weight in comparison to other physicians, all of the physician...
The question is, what is Dr. Jalil's real opinion?
His opinion was that her back...
Checking these questionnaires is necessarily the best evidence of a treating physician's opinion. Usually if you give a form to a doctor, he'll say, what do you want me to put on it? Right?
Contemporaneous medical records, Dr. Jalil had reassured Schmidt...
Realistic, right? The patient brings a form to the doctor, and the doctor says, what would you like me to write on your form, right?
Not in the form, but in the other medical records, when Schmidt sought treatment from Dr. Jalil, he had explained to her that her two prior back surgeries, the disc removal and the fusion, and the osteoarthritis that she was already experiencing were the source of her back pain, and that there was nothing that she could do to remedy that back pain. Even the physical therapist told Schmidt that there was really nothing that could be done. There was also several other physicians involved in the treatment of Schmidt. For example, Dr. Navarro, who Dr. Jalil sent Schmidt to Dr. Navarro for another opinion, said that her pain was fully consistent with early degenerative joint disease. There's no contrary evidence in the record. Every single physician has stated that she could not perform full-time work and that credited her complaints of pain and limitation as a result of the two spinal surgeries and the arthritis.
Okay, thank you. Miss, hello. Miss Sanders?
Good afternoon. My name is Yvette Sanders, and I represent the Commissioner of the Social Security. And the real issue in this case is whether or not substantial evidence supports the ALJ's conclusion that Ms. Schmidt was not disabled, and that, in fact, after analyzing the record evidence, the ALJ in this case reasonably concluded that Ms. Schmidt's impairments did not produce limitations that precluded her from performing a range of sedentary work on a full-time basis. Plaintiff Ms. Schmidt focuses the court's attention on whether or not the ALJ's decision was perfectly written. However, reading of the decision makes clear that what evidence the ALJ considered, and that the consideration of the evidence was reasonable, and he provided sufficient articulation in the decision for the court to follow his reasoning. He summarized the evidence, and he provided persuasive rationale throughout his decision. And any reasonable fact finder could reach the same conclusion that the ALJ did. Ms. Smith continually says that there was no reasoning in support of the ALJ's rejection of Dr. Jalil's opinion, and that's we beg to differ on that. Dr. Jalil, the ALJ said on page 33 of his decision that Dr. Jalil, in consultation with specialists that Dr. Jalil had referred Ms. Smith to, found pretty much no significant findings. And he talks about that, the findings for Dr. Jalil and those specialists. One of the specialists that plaintiff Ms. Smith brings up is Dr. Navarro. And while Dr. Navarro did find that Ms. Schmidt had some early degenerative joint disease, he never offered any opinion of disability. And the ALJ considered the findings, which were essentially normal, the objective findings, and it was reasonable for him to reach a conclusion that these findings did not support a finding of disability or support Dr. Jalil's extreme limitations. Ms. Schmidt also brings up the point that the ALJ limited her to no power gripping. And, you know, crediting some of Ms. Schmidt's complaints with regard to her hands and arms, and the record evidence simply does not support any greater limitations than that. When you look at the clinical findings that the ALJ discussed in his decision, in addition to the findings that Dr. Jalil found, it was very reasonable, especially in light of the fact that Dr. Jalil didn't even find that she required any type of manipulative limitations. Ms. Schmidt also has challenges the ALJ's decision with regard to rejecting a portion of Dr. Desmond's opinion that she was unable to work on a sustained basis. And the ALJ, in considering the evidence, especially and specifically noting that Dr. Desmond's findings simply didn't support that she was unable to sustain full-time work. The mental status findings were just basically normal. He didn't note very many abnormalities. In fact, he talked about her having intact memory, no impaired judgment or insight, above average concentration, no thought disorder. And he also noted that she reported her activities to be such of a level, including working several hours a day as a bookkeeper, performing household chores, doing college-level coursework, and pretty much functioning independently. The ALJ considered that and just simply, in his duty to, in his role as the person responsible for weighing the evidence, determined that they just simply didn't support this ability, this lack of ability that Dr. Desmond says that she may have difficulty. With respect to Ms. Schmidt's argument, the ALJ did specifically make findings that he did not find that her allegations of disabling pain or incapacitating limitations were consistent with the record evidence, and on transcript page 29 specifically says that they weren't consistent with the objective medical evidence or treating and examining physicians, and he reiterated this finding again, saying that on transcript page 33 that the objective findings simply do not support the level of pain asserted by Ms. Schmidt. And throughout this decision, the ALJ provides a summary discussion of all the evidence that he used in analyzing and reaching his conclusion. And based on that, we feel substantial evidence supports the ALJ's finding and that we respectfully ask that the commissioner's decision be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. Ms. Aloha, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
The commissioner paints this as an issue of whether the ALJ's decision was perfectly written. But it's not. It's an issue of what the ALJ credited. Now, the ALJ credited Dr. Desmond's opinion. He didn't award it controlling weight, but he still did credit it. He stated so twice in his hypothetical question. So we have a problem where that what the ALJ says he credited does not match the actual hypothetical he gave and the RFC. There's no logical bridge between the parts of Dr. Desmond's opinion and the ALJ's hypothetical and finding. There's an additional problem that the way the ALJ structured the hypothetical and how he omitted certain restrictions noted by Dr. Desmond, it also violates the commissioner's regulations and rulings about how stress should be asserted. How stress should be explained to the VE so that they can consider it in terms of determining what jobs the individual can do. Now, just saying a job should be low stress is not permitted, and the SSR specifically addresses what Dr. Desmond was saying, where just for individuals who, like Ms. Schmidt, have an adjustment disorder or other types of mental problems, even just appearing at work on a regular basis or fulfilling the eight-hour requirement is very difficult for those individuals. And therefore, the ALJ's hypothetical and RFC were erroneous based on the limitations he credited. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you to both counsel. Okay, so we can take our advisement.